Hey guys, and welcome to episode 108 of the OCDstories.com podcast. And this episode, I got on Chrissy Hodges. Chrissy's podcast, or my interviews with her, have been some of the most popular episodes I've done. So it's great to get her on again to talk to you guys and just to chat with her. And I wanted to get her on to talk about the OCD Game Changers event she set up in Denver in about a month's time. But because I didn't want it just to be kind of plugging that, I got in contact with some mutual friends we have, asked them questions that they wanted to ask Chrissy, and I'll go into that in a second. But the OCD Game Changers event is happening on Saturday the 3rd of March 2018 at 6:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. In Denver. I don't know Denver that well, so location-wise, check out the website, although I'm sure it's pretty accessible. So the website is chrissyhodges.com/OCD-game-changers. That's chrissyhodges.com/OCD-game-changers. But obviously, the link will be on my site. And basically, it's just an event where OCD advocates, or in this case, game changers, as Chrissy's saying, will be speaking to kind of share their journey, their story, and what they're doing to try and make OCD, or sort of living with OCD and recovery from OCD, a bit better for those that kind of face it every day. Chrissy kindly asked me to speak there, and I'm very honoured by that and humbled by it. And I'm going to be there. I'm flying out the very beginning of March for this. And I'm looking forward to sort of speaking there, meeting everyone. So some of the other speakers, obviously there's Chrissy, Neil Hemmer, or he's emceeing the event along with Chrissy. Speakers myself, Margaret Sisson, founders of Riley Wish, Corey Hirsch, former NHL goalie, Stephen Smith, founder of the NoCD app, also a sponsor of this podcast, Ethan Smith, the ISDF national ambassador, Sean Shinnock, founder of Draw Your Monster, Aaron Harvey, founder of IntrusiveThoughts.org, and Alison Dotson, author and OCD advocate. A couple of those names might be familiar to you because I've had a couple of those on the podcast as well. I think this is going to be a really positive, upbeat event where I think lots of information is going to be shared. It's just a great way to build connections. You know, when I run the meetup in London each month, you know, the core thing that came out the first one from other meetups I've been to is people realize, you know, I'm not alone. It's nice to hear other people share disturbing thoughts, and it kind of normalizes what's going in your head. So I think this is going to be a good event. If you are able to get there, tickets are on sale now, and you can head over to the site I mentioned to purchase one. But some of the sort of more generic questions we talk about include, if you were to write a I have a dream speech for OCD advocacy, what would it say? Then what are some of the goals for Chrissy's advocacy? How to deal with isolation, that's the feeling and kind of reality of it from living with OCD, some ways around that. How to cope with lapses, and advice for how to explain sexual violent blasphemous thoughts to a loved one. And I thought this was a really good question, and I think it could apply to any OCD obsession, because no matter what it is, if someone doesn't experience it, it sometimes can come across, you know, hard to swallow or more challenging, and it can take a second for someone to get their head around it. So I think the advice here is very good and can help you kind of navigate that potential maze. Chrissy also touched on the base of when to tell someone you have OCD and when not to, and even if you have to. And she gives a very kind of balanced argument on that, and I really like that. And then finally, towards the end, Chrissy goes into a lot of detail about the Game Changers event, kind of hopes for the future with it, and hopes for, you know, the actual event. So, you know, if you are in Denver or can get to Denver, it would be nice to meet you. I really like meeting listeners of the podcast, and I'm excited to meet everyone else. So it'd be good to see you there. And if you're not in Denver or can't get to Denver, Chrissy is trying to find a way of recording the event. And then if she can, she's going to put it up on the website where you'll be able to get a ticket for a limited time period after the event to watch the conference, which kind of beats the whole time zone problem depending on where you are in the world. So check out the site to stay up to date as and when Christy kind of figures that one out. I hope that's the case, because then I can share it with all you guys, and no matter where you are in the world, you can see all the speakers and get a vibe for what Christy's trying to do here. But as always, it was a pleasure talking to Christy, and I think you're going to enjoy this one.
So welcome back to the show, Christy.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here.
I'm sure it is. okay, so and yeah, how have you been since we last spoke?
Busy, yeah. Very busy. A couple things. We're going to get to this a little later, but I'm planning a huge event here in Denver. And also, I launched a brand new podcast, which has really kept me busy, called Coffee with Christy. I did it because even though I do a lot of advocating for OCD, my passion really lies in what all of us struggle with emotionally when it comes to mental illness.
Yeah.
And so just from the demand of working with people in peer support in my own experience, there are so many deeper emotional issues that I wanted to touch on. So I created Coffee with Christy, your morning mental health messages of hope, where 5 days a week, I do 5 minutes or less, or I try to keep it to 5 minutes. Yeah. Sometimes I go six. just morning messages to help people know they're not alone in what they're struggling with mental illness. And if they need some motivation to just get out there and do what they need to do, I want them to know I'm there with them. So that's taken up a lot of time, and I have loved it. It has helped me just as much as it's helped other people.
Yeah, no, I love it. I forgot to ask you about that. Yeah, I'll link in the show notes to anyone who wants to find out more about that. It's a good idea, and I agree. You know, it's nice to cover not just OCD, but mental health generally. Because whether it's OCD, depression, psychosis, it's all struggling in the mind.
Yeah. I think the emotional piece is just this common thread that runs through all of our experiences, the feeling alone and the shame, and that does not vary with diagnosis. And I want us to know that we are a joint community and we can support each other no matter what the diagnosis.
Yeah. Yeah, really good message. Okay, cool. So yeah, I'll link to that. And then in a minute, we're going to get to the Game Changers event, which I'll be at as well, which I'm really excited about. Okay, so I've got some questions from some of your friends on Facebook and your fans, I'm sure. So the first one is from Michelle, which is, and I really like this, it's, if you were to write I have a dream speech for OCD advocacy, what would it say?
Oh, Michelle, the deep question. My ultimate dream has always been, number one, that people can immediately know to ask for help whenever they're struggling for symptoms. That is why I do what I do. I know that OCD feels so real. The obsessions that we get, it feels part of who we are, our character, our person, even though we know that they're not linked to our desires and wants, but they feel so real. And I want people to know, whether they have OCD or not, to hear the message that I'm sending, to hear the lived experience of all of us that are advocating, and know if their son or daughter or spouse or friend comes to them and says, I'm having intrusive thoughts, that person can say, I know where to send you to get help. I don't want people to suffer more than a minute with this without knowing that help is out there. Now, I know that is a grandiose dream, but if I am going to put the I have a dream speak together, it is going to be that people do not have to suffer. They know that help is available and they are not alone.
Yeah, really good. Good answer. And obviously, I'm sure MLK knew it was a grand dream, but we're working towards it slowly.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, great. So I guess you've kind of answered it with that question, but Michelle also wanted to know, what are some of your goals for advocacy?
Well, my ultimate goal is what I just described in helping people understand that they're living with symptoms and that there is treatment. But if any of you follow me, you know that my biggest passion when it comes to OC advocacy is going to be for the nicknamed type of OCD called pure OCD, pure O, which is a community identifies as individuals who have sexual, violent, blasphemous, intrusive thoughts, or just intrusive thoughts that are accompanied by mental rituals. this is something that I struggled with for over a decade with, having no idea that I had OCD, having no idea that I could tell anyone and that the repercussions wouldn't be that those intrusive thoughts would become real. So my sole goal in doing advocacy is to share as much as open as possible about any of these obsessions so people know that they can get help and that they aren't alone. The terrifying thing about this subset of OCD, which it is OCD, but we don't feel like we identify in the community of individuals who have physical compulsions. So washing hands and organizing, we are doing compulsions all day, every day at times when we're dealing with these obsessions, and it feels very alone. There isn't a day that goes by that I don't work with my peers that they say, I know you've probably never heard of this, whether it be pedophilia, OCD themed OCD, or homosexual themed, or, you know, violent killing or whatever. And I want to just scream from the rooftop. There are people all over the world, same symptoms, same everything. You are not alone. And that is the sole mission of why I do what I do, because I've been there. I know how bad it sucks.
Yeah.
And equally as bad is the shame, the guilt, and the embarrassment of thinking that this is a reflection on who you are as a person. And if you are listening right now, it is not a reflection of who you are. And you are not the exception. And treatment can work. And so take a chance, go get some treatment. You can live successfully with this.
Yeah, good message. I agree. I've heard that so many times as well from people saying, you know, I'm the only one, or you may have never heard of this, and I'm like, I've heard of it a million times usually, and then I feel bad that I'm now making it almost feel that they're not special in the sense. But then again, you don't want to be special with those thoughts.
I was going to say, do we really want to be special? Yeah,
you want to be kind of common with them.
I think that the interesting thing, and I know, Stu, we could go off on a whole tangent. You know how I am. I'm a tangent person. But I think the thing is the unique part about OCD is that we are more willing to want to fight to say it's not OCD than it actually is. And so I think a lot of times that is the argument versus, you know, you're not really that special. People just want to go, no, but I really am, because I don't really have OCD. This is real. And so it is bizarre to me, number one, because I've experienced it. And one of my biggest secondary fears is maybe I don't have OCD and I am just a monster or whatever my thoughts are manifesting at the time. But to try to convince someone, no, you aren't special in the way of you aren't the one person that can't get treated that doesn't really have OCD. It is a very bizarre maze to have to go through to help support someone in wanting to get help.
Yeah, I agree. It's a maze is probably the best way of saying it. It's very tricky at times, but
it is.
If you keep moving, eventually you're bound to find the exit. Okay, so Felice now wants to know, and you mentioned isolation there, so it's a nice kind of segue. She said, isolation is horrible when you suffer from OCD. What would you recommend to reduce the isolation?
Well, to reduce the isolation, this is a slippery slope, because I do know that listening to podcasts such as the OCD Stories and YouTube videos such as Chrissy Hodges, Pure OCD Advocate, can become compulsions. Yes. However, God, this is a hard question to answer because I have to be really mindful of the compulsion piece. But knowing that you aren't alone, being able to identify with other symptoms, being able to hear that other people have been successful in treatment can really help with being isolated. But being mindful of, why are you listening? Are you listening because you are looking for that motivation or the understanding of where to go for help, or are you looking to make yourself feel better?
Yeah.
As far as feeling isolated where you are, this is a tough question, because I'm here in Denver. There are a lot of OCD specialists here. There are a lot of people with OCD, but it's tough to get them all in one space. And Stu, you and I were talking about this right before we came on, of throwing an OCD event or doing a support group or doing things and having people come out can be really scary when you have OCD, because it's called the doubting disease for a reason. You're worried that what if you're not going to fit in? You're worried if what if other people are more severe than I am, and then I don't belong there, or what if I go there and I find out there's no help for me? All of these what if questions are going to come up. So when I'm feeling isolated, I typically will jump online with the friends that I know that live with OCD and check in with them. I've addressed this before in my podcast and in my videos. It's okay to reach out and ask for help. It's okay to say, I'm not doing well today. Can you just be with me for a little while, maybe on the phone, or maybe just chat with me for a little bit and just tell me everything's going to be okay. Reaching out for that support when you need it versus thinking nobody can be there for me and I'm too afraid to ask for help, but taking that initiative and asking, you'll be surprised at how many people are willing to be there to meet you where you're at.
Yeah. Yeah. Really good answer. And I agree on the videos. It's kind of, are you watching it to make yourself feel better? If so, stop.
I once had someone tell me that her therapist wrote into her ERP plan that she was not allowed to watch my videos anymore.
What a bad therapist.
I will never refer to her again.
Yeah. Well, I'm grateful. I get a lot of therapists say, tell me that they recommend my podcast to their clients, which obviously I'm very flattered about. But then I'm also like, make sure you caveat it that they should only be listening for information, not for comfort. There's also a line there, right? Because it's okay to get comfort and that's nice. But it's, I guess, if you keep going back to the same video, because there's something that maybe I say or you say in one of those videos or podcasts that reassures you, that's when, and I've done that before. There was certain audio clips I used to go back and back to because there's something that kept telling me that, oh no, I was okay, whatever it was.
First diagnosed, this was before all the internet stuff, I went back and back and back to Dr. Phillipson's Thinking the Unthinkable. Yeah. It became a compulsion for me. If I read it over, I would feel good for a little bit. And then luckily I was able to get ERP and understand that that was a compulsion. But I do think that there is a line between normalization of what you're going through and wanting to feel, okay, this is normal and I am not a bad person, or I can get treatment and I need this in order to feel better about what I'm going through. And I think that being able to recognize that line and work with a therapist on creating those boundaries are really important in getting ERP.
Yeah. No, I think that's really good. And I suppose once they're in therapy, if a therapist does recommend one of our resources to them, the therapist should pick up that if they're using this compulsively or for reassurance or whatever. So I think it's fine. Actually, one other thing to add actually on that kind of isolation from more practical, because people with OCD, they may not have a social anxiety diagnosis or severe social anxiety, but general anxiety is usually alongside, and going to a meetup is scary. For my first London meetup I did here, I had 17 people say they were going to go, and I had 6 turn up. And I had a few people say they got ill, which was fine, but I have no doubt quite a few of them probably got socially anxious, and I'm not blaming them because I've done that a million times in my past, and I'm unfortunately probably still do it occasionally. So I guess a way around that is, bring a friend, bring a family member, because whether it's my meetup, one you do, Chrissy, or whether it's an actual support group, you will, and the support group organizers will be more than happy to let a family member come or a friend to support them, just so you've socially got someone to talk to. Don't know where I was going with that, but.
I know, I agree, and I'm going to raise my hand here and tell you that I am an extrovert by nature. Most people will see me in a room or a crowd and see that I'm an extrovert, but I am what I call a social loner. If you can get me through the door, I will be an extrovert.
Yeah.
But getting me to that door and through it takes a lot more. And I think a lot of that comes from OCD. I think a lot of it is just that self-doubt, the self-esteem issue of, what if people don't like me? What if people this? What if people that? And I'm right there with everybody. I always know that if, and you know, throwing this big event, there are probably going to be people lurking around the parking lot wondering if they should go in. I should probably have volunteers in the parking lot to push people in. Yeah. We know it's going to happen.
That's a good point. Yeah. So yeah, as soon as you see people get within 50 meters and then start to turn around, approach them and ask them what they're doing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So the next question is from Mark. He wants to know, it's a good question, how does Chrissy cope with lapses? And then he put, we realize it was fleeting after we start to function again, but how would Chrissy advise to somehow remember in the midst of a storm that this is just a lapse? P.S. Still dig the fun hair.
Hi, Mark. This is such a good question, and actually one that I am hoping to do a video on really soon. Cool. I think it's really important for several reasons. And I think I expressed this earlier when we were talking, or either I expressed it right here in the podcast, is that one of my biggest secondary fears is, what if I don't have OCD and these thoughts are real? So a good way to be able to compare this would be, I know how to ski, right? And so I used to live in a ski town and I was skiing almost every day or every other day. So I got really good at it. I haven't been now in 3 years. So if I go back onto a slope, I'm not going to go directly to a black diamond slope on my Telemark skis. I mean, I would be a hot mess. I would slide down. I'd probably get injured, right?
Yeah.
But I take a little bit of time to warm up going onto the mountain knowing, okay, this is going to be tough for the first couple hours. Yeah. And today might be tough, but I'm going to go back tomorrow. And I think that getting back on the skis and getting on the slopes that are okay with me, I'm going to be all right. This is the way to approach when you have a relapse. We expect that once we go through successful therapy, there's this huge relief, other than the emotional turmoil, which is a whole other topic for another time. But there's this huge relief of, oh my goodness, because we are black and white thinkers, those of us with OCD. Oh my goodness, the symptoms are gone. It's never going to come back.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but this is how we are and this is what we want. Oh, I feel so much relief. It's never going to be that bad again. So we set ourselves up for the first relapse.
Yeah.
When that relapse happens, it takes me, I'm about 19 years into recovery, but now it takes me a couple days. The first few relapses after successful therapy, oh my goodness, weeks, sometimes months. Why? Because you forget. The same way with skiing. You know, you forget how to do it. But then once you get on board and, okay, I'm going to have a few falls, it's going to be all right, then you remember and you start building from there. But we are so hard on ourselves when it comes to OCD, aren't we? I mean, yeah. It's this, oh my goodness, I've failed. I've had intrusive thoughts again. What did I do wrong? How did I let this happen? And so a lot of, I think, what we work through in a relapse, a lot of that is just the emotional baggage and beating ourselves up for, is this the end? Is this going to be the time I end up in the hospital? Is this the time that it's going to, you know, be the worst ever and I'm never going to get better? So for me now, this is what I do. When I recognize that it's OCD, which is I have memorized my pattern of behavior physically and emotionally and mentally, when I finally recognize it is, I take some time to pout, to be really sad, to be really angry, to say, I hate this illness and I hate who I am and I hate everybody. I allow myself to feel sorry for myself. I only allow it for a certain amount of time and then I'm like, okay, let's go. Let's plan out ERP. Let's do what we need to do. But you know what? I take time for that grief.
Yeah.
Because that way I'm acknowledging it's okay to be sad.
Yeah.
It's okay to feel frustrated that you weren't on top of this. It's okay to have all these feelings. But now it's time to get to work. And then once I set the ERP plan, I usually have to have some support because I always think ERP isn't going to work this time. But then once I do it,
yeah,
it takes me a few days to work through it. And then I assess it a little bit later. So I think, you know, to answer that question, you know, what do you do? you allow whatever feelings that you have to be there and to give yourself some self-love and compassion. This is a lifelong illness. This is not something that, you know, if anybody says they're a cure, they're full of shit. You know, maybe you never have a relapse and that's awesome. But for many of us,
yeah,
we do. And so to be able to say to ourselves, here's the disorder. It's rearing its head again, but you know what? I know what to do. I got control of it once. I can do it again. I might feel sad. I might feel angry. And I'm going to throw all of that into the ERP pot too. And I'm going to deal with all of it and love myself anyway.
Yeah, really, really good message. And I loved the bit about kind of giving yourself time. As we've talked, or you talked about in I think our last podcast, you talked about, you know, grieving for kind of the person you lost. And although this is slightly different, it's still a lot along the lines of just allowing yourself to feel emotion and not beat yourself up about it. Because, you know, what I've learned in my own life is repressing emotion just causes more problems.
Yes.
So allowing yourself to grieve in that moment, or to feel sad, or maybe even a bit annoyed, is okay. It's human. And I think also the whole idea of relapse and why people beat themselves up as well. And you said you were going to get what's the word? Oh my god, why is it gone from my vocabulary? Oh my god. Anyway. Oh god, I don't know if I can continue explaining this about this bloody word. Anyway, you were going to cause some trouble with something you were going to say later. And so I guess I'll start now. I think it's a error of the medical system that we've put on people with mental illness, where we've through treatment we've kind of not even indirectly said that, you know, you do this treatment, you get better, you lose all your spikes, it doesn't come up again. Even though that, you know, therapists won't necessarily say that, but to me there's this kind of undertone, and maybe it's just something I'm picking up on, when in reality what the medical field should be saying is, no, these skills you learn in treatment are things you do throughout your life, and if it comes back, there's a good chance it's because you stopped doing those things. And it doesn't mean you deserve it, it just means anything in life, as you said with the skiing, if you stop skiing you get bad at it, and that's a reality of skill learning and whatever. And for me, that's a message I want to drum home, is kind of, it's something you do throughout your life, and that's not necessarily something to be sad about, which I think I was when I first realized. It's actually empowering, because the more I do it, there's other areas in my life, like when things are good and my brain's not being a dick, I'm like just so much better in every other area of my life that isn't OCD related, because of the skills I learned through accepting my thoughts, through facing my fears. Long-winded way of saying it, but yeah, I think it's a worthwhile pursuit every day to keep overcoming OCD, because it's not just OCD you're overcoming, it's everything else that's trying to hold you back.
Well, and again, just to emphasize, I think it's an understatement to say that most of us, I can't say all of us, but most of us are black and white thinkers.
Yeah.
And a lot of that for me was born out of the 12 years that I lived with this illness. When things were really awful, I would feel like they're never going to be good again. And then when things were great, my brain would go, look, you're over it. It's never going to be bad again. I couldn't remember which either place there was no middle, there was no gray area. And I was too afraid of the gray area, to be honest with you, because my OCD manifests with, it's either this or it's that. And so I have to, like I say a lot of times, manually override my brain to say, it's okay to sit in the middle, Chrissy. It doesn't have to be one or the other, but it's almost like my emotions like hook me and reel me in, you know, on a fishing line of it has to be this or it has to be that. And I agree with you. It's daunting when people find out OCD is a lifelong illness. And in a way, it's, well, I've had people say to me before, well, then why even get treatment if I'm going to continue to feel miserable? You know, people with diabetes, it's a lifelong illness. but they adopt measures, you know, during their day on how to eat better, how to exercise, how, you know, they're still going to deal with the illness, but you can still have a quality of life that is worth living. And so, yes, I see that. But there again is that black and white thinking. It feels daunting. You're never going to get rid of OCD. It's always going to be there. Yeah, but that doesn't mean it's going to be plaguing you 24/7,
yeah,
likely as it was before you realized that you had it. And so getting people over that hump of saying, you know what, you are going to have this, but being able to learn the tools and be able to practice it absolutely daily, because most of us don't until the first relapse. And then we're like, whoops.
Yeah.
Maybe there's something to this everyday mindfulness stuff. So I think, like anything, Sue, recovery is fluid. Recovery is a learning curve.
Yeah.
And the ups and downs are different for everyone. And it's a solo journey. But the end result is being able to live happily and successfully with a disorder that really did torment most of us for years until we found out what it was.
Yeah. Yeah, spot on. And the word I was thinking of was controversial, and I don't know why that left my mind. It's been a really long day. I completely agree. I think another way to look at it is kind of like, you know, we haven't in our adult life consciously learned adult skills. Communication skills, or like how to make friends. We kind of learned that as a kid, but ultimately the learning is still there. And we don't stop asking people how they are or if they're okay. And if we stop that, wonder, why does no one want to talk to us anymore? And it's kind of like that of OCD. You just keep doing the things you were taught to keep getting the results you got in therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so I think, again, it's one of the tangents we could go on for hours on. So our detour here. Natalie wants to know... Okay, advice. I like this one. Advice on how to explain sexual, violent, blasphemous thoughts to a loved one.
Oh, one of the biggest questions, the most common questions that I get, and one of the most difficult that I had to deal with in my own life with sexual intrusive thoughts. This is a tough topic.
Mm.
And in fact, I addressed this on my podcast last week. 5 minutes per day, 5 days a week, I talked about how to share your story. And for any mental illness, it's difficult to share the details of your yes. story, because we ourselves put personal stigma on top of us. And then there's societal stigma. And here's the kicker. You can't control how other people are going to take that information.
Mm.
And that is terrifying for us. We want to make sure everybody knows that it's okay, especially with sexual, violent, blasphemous, intrusive thoughts. We want to make sure people know, you do believe this, that it's an illness, right? You know this isn't part of who I am, and you can't control that. So a couple things I like to lead with. Number one, it's your story to tell. And to quote Corey Hirsch, a fellow advocate, I love him, it's none of anyone's damn business what you've been through. So between the two of those, what is your story? What do you feel comfortable telling people? Because not telling them details doesn't say anything about them or you.
Mm.
It is deciding what you feel like is necessary to tell people, because not everyone's going to get it. Not everybody is going to understand. Not everybody wants to understand or can.
Yeah.
But if you feel absolutely compelled, I need to tell my loved ones about this, my biggest suggestion is, if you can't just come out and say it, like someone like I do, I don't even care. If you can't come out and say it, go to the experts. Print off clinical information about what you're living with. I always suggest John Hirschfield's site, OCD Baltimore,
yeah.
Dr. Phillipson's site, OCD Online. Print off articles. Print off success stories. Print off the clinical information that points to what you are living with. Have your loved one read it. Have them formulate some questions they want to ask you. But keep in mind, it's your story to tell. You never have to divulge information about what you're experiencing. You never have to divulge about ERP. That is no one's business.
Hmm.
In ERP, we have to expose ourselves to things that are terrifying to us. We don't even get it going through ERP. It's not our job to make someone else understand why we're doing it. The goal is symptom management. It's not to make the world understand what we're going through. So if you absolutely need to tell your loved ones, front load it. Front load it with clinical evidence-based information and have them formulate the questions and only tell people what you are willing to hear negative feedback about. That's my rule of thumb.
Yeah.
If I'm willing to hear something negative, then I will tell something. If I'm not, it's none of their business.
Yeah, really good. I like that. That's a good kind of how-to. Because I think it's a very emotionally tough thing to do. And I agree. I was speaking to someone the other day about a younger person who eventually will go into kind of the corporate world and asking if, you know, he needs to tell the employer about his OCD. And I was kind of like, if you can do your job without it affecting you too much, you don't need to say a thing. It's none of their business. If you're going to be in the toilet washing your hands 2 hours of the day, then you should probably warn them. And then they can either say no, or they could put in the right supports for you. But especially from a pure O, for me, there was times when I was just staring at a computer screen and I realized 10 minutes had gone past, I hadn't done any work and people were probably wondering what was going on. But other than that, like a lot of it, I could continue working even in some dark times. I could continue moving forward. It's even none of their damn business. So you tell them what you want to tell them. And one other thing I'd like to add from my own experience is if you do open up to someone and they dismiss your story, as in they're like, it's bullshit, or you look fine, you're normal, you never went through that, it was never, you're exaggerating or hypochondria or whatever, don't kind of get mad and respond very quickly. You know, breathe, realize right. that this says more about them than it does about you, and maybe you need to step away and come back another day and continue it. Because a lot of the time, especially if parents or loved ones or siblings hear it, and there's guilt on their part because they feel, why didn't I ever pick up on this? That's not to make them feel bad, but that's why sometimes people react badly. So I just wanted to caveat that, because I think it's all too easy to react when people don't respond how you want them to, or how ideally they should.
Right. I agree, especially when it comes to the pure O, intrusive thoughts of a sexual, violent, blasphemous nature. Stu, you and I know this, and if anyone listening needs to hear it, not everybody is going to get it. Everybody will understand. It's hard to understand. It's hard for us to understand. I don't get it. I don't want the thoughts. How am I supposed to explain to someone that I don't want the thoughts, but they're still there? So it's okay that people don't get it. Mm. And maybe they're just not part of that support system, or maybe they just don't need to know. That doesn't mean they're a bad person.
No.
Ultimately, you get to decide who knows the details. And all that matters is that that story of yours is protected and honored and valued by the people you decide to tell.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I mean, I'm very vocal, like with my story, as are you. But there's still a few things like I've never really told anyone or talked about because it's none of their business. It's too vulnerable for me, and maybe I should share it, but I don't really see too much of the point. So it's kind of like, I've curated my own story. I've shared right. what people need to know. I've shared how I needed to share to get the help I needed. And the kind of the cream on top is just for me.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that once I got to talking about the groinal syndrome, there was nothing else I could hide.
Yeah.
That was it at that point. Like, I might as well tell everything.
Yeah. Start at the worst and then work back.
But that, that has saved people's lives, knowing that they're not alone. So it's all true. What you're willing to share and get negative feedback about. And I'm just, bring on the negativity. I could give zero shits.
Great. That's really good. No, I respect your bravery. And like you said, it's important for people to hear it. That's kind of those questions. Now we're going to get onto the event, the Game Changers event in Denver.
Yes.
So yeah, just tell us about it.
Oh, I am so excited. I got this idea when I came home from actually the International OCD Foundation conference last year. Yeah. And Stu, we saw each other in passing briefly, once and then yeah. got to speak briefly. And I was so mad because I wanted to talk to you more and I wanted to talk to so many other people more. And it just gets so busy. And I got home, I felt very sad and I felt very, you know, I didn't want to wait a full year to see these people that I see as an advocate that are doing amazing things worldwide, reaching audiences that have never been reached before. And, you know, really not that I don't feel, you know, feeling kind of this congealed support network of being able to say we're a platform of advocates, kind of like up and coming advocates, you know, doing these new innovative things and never really been together before to be able to showcase that, number one, or support each other. And I think that in a movement, you've got to support the up and coming advocates, the people, you know, the kind of like what I call like new generational advocate. That's what I look at myself as. You know, I wasn't doing advocacy like a few years ago. Hold on 1 second. Hold up. I am at my house and the trash guy just came by. It was going to be really loud. So, and so what I wanted to do is bring together a group of people who, you know, have been doing advocacy for a little while or are just starting out or just launching their projects. And for us to be able to, number one, brainstorm on how we can support each other's work yeah. and how we can create this network and reach more people. Because that is the goal. The goal is to reach people on the far ends of the earth and help them know that they're not alone. Now, selfishly, like I did put together a group of people who most of them have the type of OCD that I have. That's more of like the mental compulsion piece, but that I think it kind of just came together that way. But those are kind of the advocates I feel like really need a platform because there hasn't been a platform for people that are talking about the mental compulsions, the pure O, the pure OCD, the sexual, violent, blasphemous, intrusive thoughts. We've got to get that information out there. These are thousands of people who are dying by suicide because they don't know that they have a mental illness. They don't know that they can get help and that they can get treatment. And so a platform has got to be created for all of us to start to support one another and to be able to launch these projects out so everybody at the ends of the earth, kind of like my I have a dream speech. You know, I can't do it by myself. Yeah. I need people like you and I need people that understand that this type of OCD, and we can band together and really make a statement. And so that's kind of behind why I wanted to do this and also selfishly because I love my advocates and I wanted to spend a weekend with y'all. Get to know you better.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to you know, see you again and get to know the others. And I think what came up for me then as you were talking is I think the more you can kind of raise awareness around the pure O side of OCD, in a weird way, that's probably one of the best ways to amplify awareness generally about OCD. Because if people can accept pure O, they can accept hand washing and checking and whatever else, more physical type compulsions. Yeah. Because that's more acceptable to the general public than the other stuff. So it's, yeah, kind of start where it's hardest and then the other stuff just becomes understood.
Right. And it's I think that there's just a general misunderstanding about this, how OCD manifests in this way. It you know, Corey Hirsch and I were talking yesterday. It's just maddening to think that people are living for years with sexual, violent, intrusive thoughts, and they think this is about them, and they don't know it's about OCD because they don't hand wash. You know, the amount of people that go to therapists and say, I found out about, you know, that I have sexual, violent, intrusive thoughts, and the therapist goes, oh, you don't have OCD because you don't do outward compulsions. It's bullshit. Mm-hmm. And so my sole advocacy is behind this, And so to pull together a bunch of people who are doing different projects to bring awareness to that can make a huge splash, because we need this splash. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people worldwide are suffering with this. And why? Because they just don't know that they have OCD. And I can't sleep at night knowing that. We've got to figure out how to connect to these people and how to say help is available. You are not alone, and you don't have to live and suffer, and you don't have to die because of this.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. It's a great message, and it's kind of one, yeah, of the podcast is just to make people feel less alone, to realize they're not crazy, which is one of the common fears. They're not, well, they may be a bad person, but it's not because of the OCD.
Right.
We'll see. you know, because sometimes bad people do have OCD, but I've yet to meet one. So, yeah, I think it's a noble message, and it's getting better all the time. And as you say, this event is hopefully one of the big stepping stones towards that. Okay, so next question then is, you've answered my next one. The one after is kind of what will people learn? What will kind of the talks be around?
So another huge inquiry by people that live with OCD and then get successfully treated, yeah, is how can I give back? A lot of times people go, I want to give back. What can I do? And there's a big hurdle right there, mm-hmm, of what can you do to get involved in advocacy. So that is another reason why I wanted to bring these people together. Each of us are doing vastly different things with the sole goal of creating awareness, helping people to know they're not alone and that help is available.
Yeah.
So I wanted to highlight every person's platform and what they're doing. Number one, I don't want this to be, you know, a downer event, but I do want people to know that we all came from a place of severe pain and suffering. Mm-hmm. I mean, severe. Only to get to a point where we could see that there's a flip side to that coin, and then took it a step further of what can I do? How can I use my talents? How can I use my creativity? What am I good at? And where can I put on display in order to bring people to knowing that they can get help too? And so the people here all have vastly different platforms. I mean, we even have Margaret, who is a mom. And, you know, she lost her son, Riley, and she also has, you know, her daughter, Sarah, lives with OCD. And so we have, you know, we have the family aspect there, and she's also going to talk about substance use. Myself and Sean Chinook, we're both going to talk about substance use as well. So being able to showcase all of these different platforms, not only number one, of course, to help people know they're not alone, but number two, if you want to be an advocate, there is a huge stage. And there's room on that stage for anybody and everybody. And we need as many people talking out loud, using their voices and creativity to help us bring awareness. So I want to show them, if we can all do it, so can you. Because, yeah, Stu, 5 years ago, I was just I want to be an advocate. Didn't know what I was doing. Didn't, yeah, know what to do. I just knew that's what I was going to do. And so if our event can foster one idea and put that person on a platform to bring hundreds of people to treatment, then it is a success.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. And I think also, because it doesn't necessarily have to be on, you know, the scale we're doing it, because sometimes this is more work than I need. But luckily it's rewarding, so I keep going. But, you know, it could just, the amount of people I speak to that are like, there's no sort of support groups in my area. And I'm like, well, be the change you want to see, in Gandhi's words, and set one up. Like, mm-hmm, it's not to make it small, because it's a lot of work, but it's not, it's simple. Like, you know, the two charities in the UK, both of them run support groups. And if you contact them, they will help you set up a support group in your area. And I'm sure it's the same with the ISDF and any other mental health charities around the world. And for me, I'd love to see more and more people doing advocacy that way, because, mm-hmm, it's support groups are an extremely important service to people's recovery, and there's not enough of them, sadly. But yeah, anyway.
I think that sometimes people need to see, you know, I'm just an ordinary person, yes, with OCD.
Yeah.
And sometimes people need to see that ordinary people can do extraordinary things. I think that people look at advocacy and say, oh, but they have this and they have that. I mean, look at Corey Hirsch. He's an NHL former goalie. So of course they're going to go, well, he has a natural platform. Well, yeah, he does. But, you know, I was not a nobody. I don't want to say that, but like, I didn't know anything about advocacy and I just decided one day. I'm going to do it. I don't even know what that form is going to take. And so many of the advocates that are going to be here at this event, I feel like started the same way.
Yeah.
This, I'm going to make a difference. I don't know how, but I'm just going to start somewhere. And so I'm hoping that's what the event shows, that there's plenty of room, plenty of opportunity. And we want people to start stepping out and talking more about this, because the more people that talk, the more are going to listen, the more we break down stigma, and the more people will get help and treatment. That's the goal.
Absolutely. I think that's really, really important. And I like the idea of kind of using your individual skills. Like for me, I like interviewing people on a one-to-one basis and having deep, meaningful conversations. So podcasting worked perfectly for me. Sean Chinook, who's going to be there, he draws, right? So he helps people draw their monster. So it's about finding your skill, and you're very good with people. So you've done it through video and through social media. You're very good at that. And I think it's about finding what you enjoy in life and thinking, how can I tailor this to reach people about OCD? And it could be anything. It could be juggling. And you do start to do juggling. There's always a way of merging your two kind of interests.
Kevin Putnam did, you know, run OCD for a while, and he did ping pong tournaments. I mean, you do what you have to do, and you do it well, and you raise awareness. The end.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It is that simple. There's a lot of work, but it's not that. It is that simple. Okay. So, will there be a social element afterwards?
Oh, I'm hoping. I mean, I think the whole thing is going to be social. It's the doors open. It's here in Denver, Colorado, and I will. Okay. It's here in Denver, Colorado. Doors open at 5. It's at the historic Grant Theater. So I'm assuming, Stu, you'll help promote like the exact location and everything. And you can find that event page on my website at ChristyHodges.com. I think we'll have booths and things like that, so you can just socialize. And I'm hoping that we'll have all of the speakers out before to meet people as they're coming in, so people can feel more comfortable, because sometimes it's hard coming to events where you don't know people. And then the event will run, and then afterwards I'm hoping that all of us will be able to go somewhere. I will have that posted on my website as soon as I find out, very nearby the location where we can, you know, have a beer and everybody meet the advocates and sign books and sign whatever else, or find out more about people's projects. As far as food, there will not be food at the event. However, Chipotle, Jimmy John's, and Lark Burger are right around the corner, and I'm hoping that they'll offer discounts to the people that are going to be there. Yeah. So, you know, stay tuned for the social element after, but I know all of us, there will be socializing.
Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to it, and to meeting everyone and just hearing people's stories. I don't have a book, but I will sign your baby if you bring it. I'll bring a Sharpie. Okay, so I think that's kind of all my questions, and obviously all the links and stuff will be at the show notes. Like I said, excellent. I'll be there, Chrissy will be there, loads of other great advocates will be there, so we're all excited to meet everyone and just have a good time.
Yes, so the reason why I'm calling this the OCD Game Changers is because these people that are coming are doing things that inspire me every single day. And they inspire me to wake up every day and think outside of whatever box I'm in my advocacy, to change the game, to find people everywhere. Because it is going to take a lot of creativity and a lot of collaboration and support to be able to reach the thousands of people that have no idea that they have the type of OCD that is pure O. You know, intrusive thoughts, sexual, violent, blasphemous, intrusive thoughts. And so what we need are game changers, people that are going to think outside the box and work tirelessly to find these people and to get them the help that they need and deserve.
Yeah. Yeah, 100% agree. And I love the mission. And
I can't wait for you to be here.
Yeah, well, yeah, I've always wanted to go to Denver, so yeah. That mission, no matter how grand, doesn't scare me because it's inevitable. If enough people keep working towards the same direction, it's inevitable it has to happen. Yeah, that gives me hope. But as always, I've really enjoyed talking with you, Chrissy. We'll see you in Denver and hopefully everyone listening.
Thank you so much for having me on. Always a pleasure, Stu. I just always love talking to you. I appreciate everything that you do and the way that it affects the clients that I work with and everybody around the world. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed my chat with Chrissy. And if you're interested in that event or interested in the video, watching the video kind of after the event, wherever you are in the world, head over to chrissyhodges.com/OCD-game-changers or go to theocdstories.com/podcast and look at the show notes for this, and there'll be a link to the site there. As always, disclaimer, this podcast is not therapy, nor should it be a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. Until we speak, take care.